Thank you to the sponsor of today's podcast, Call of Dragons. Call of Dragons is an original, immersive, and epic fantasy world. Taking place in the world known as Tamaris, team up with the elves, orcs, celestials, goblins, and countless other magical creatures to build your vast army. Dive into your own fantasy city with unique decor for each faction. Arrange your city as you see fit, and build the unique fantasy metropolis of your dreams. Once you leave the safety of your own city, prepare for battle alongside your scary but friendly behemoth. Command your behemoth to aid you in battle with a variety of epic behemoths are scattered across Tamaris. Powerful giant bears, venomous hydras, lightning-fast thunder rocks, and terrifying flame dragons. Work together with your alliance to defeat them and bring them under your command, then unleash them in battle. And please don't forget to name them. Train up your heroes with unique skills that can turn the tide of battle in an instant. Unleash powerful abilities to wipe out your opponents with a huge array of equipable magical artifacts, each with their own unique skills. Turn invisible, move at astounding speed, teleport or heal your units in an instant. Equip your heroes with an artifact that suits their abilities and unleash artifact skills to dominate the battlefield. Call of Dragons has true 3D terrain that shapes the gameplay. Tamaris is a land of mountains, rivers, valleys, tundra, and countless other features. Not only is it beautiful, it's also essential to use your terrain to your advantage. Build your city on a plateau to make yourself impervious to attack. Set up an ambush in a mountain valley to wipe out enemy forces, or occupy the high ground and cut all would-be invaders down to size. And that's just scratching the surface. In Call of Dragons, combat isn't just a matter of numbers. With the right strategy, you can turn any situation to your advantage. All these features come together to create an incredible fantasy battle experience that allows you to wage war your way. So, if you're ready to jump into the fantasy world of Tamaris, download Call of Dragons today on PC or mobile by using my link in the description.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So I guess you guys were at cooler parties than me back in high school.
You didn't have lighter politics?
No, we didn't have lighter politics. I remember on my 18th birthday, I went out and I bought myself a lighter, but I didn't smoke because my grandpa smoked all the time, and I thought it was an old man thing. I just wanted a lighter because lighters are cool looking.
You just would light it and put it under your hand to feel alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what the classic move is you go into a 7-Eleven, you buy a lighter, and then you set the 7-Eleven on fire.
There's enough 7-Elevens that you can do that. There's so many. Like, even the people who work there are like, well, I'm just going across the street to the other one. I'll be good.
They want you. They want you to do that.
Yeah, and the employees of the 7-Eleven, like, whoever's the manager at that point, like, they have to go down with the ship. So they just kind of let you do it.
But they see you, buying the lighter as you're paying for it. They're just shaking their head like, God damn it.
They just start pouring lighter fluid on their head.
I'll just take this lighter and this stack of old newspapers.
Fine, God damn it.
Did I ever tell you guys about the 7-Eleven across the street from my high school? Mm-hmm. And like there was this, they were selling like those roses in a pipe. Do you remember when 7-Eleven would sell those?
What?
Roses in a pipe?
Yeah, it was like a little glass thing. It was like a, you know, romantic gift for Valentine's Day. Here's like a tiny rose in like a some kind of beaker situation.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and it became a thing on the news. They were like, people are using these for smoke and crack because it's a glass pipe that you could just heat up, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And when you would go in there, you would, you know, he hated high school students. And like once in a while, people would be like, what's this for? And they'd pick up this little rose in the pipe and he would go, it's a crack pipe. And I remember he had to stop doing that. Because the police were like, you cannot be saying that that's a crack pipe. You can't be selling crack pipes at the 7-Eleven.
You can't teach these children to use this for drugs.
Yeah, so like he had to stop. He had to stop himself. And he was, you know, a little disappointed. We could all tell.
Very hard for an old man to stop a joke he loves.
Yes.
Especially about, you know, injuring children. Mm-hmm. When I heard a rose contained in a glass, I thought it was like a Beauty and the Beast situation where like he was selling a cursed object that told you like how many days left you had until your curse was solidified. But if you found love before that.
Yeah, I did buy one and, you know, the petals began to fall off it. And each time I went back in there, he was older. And then one day he didn't work there anymore.
Well, one day he turned into a sentient cash register. Wait, that's not how the Beast Curse works.
He turned into a lighter.
And burned his own store there. Saying,
that's the lighter that burnt down that 7-Eleven.
Yep.
How does the Beast and the Beauty and the Beast spell, like, how does it determine what, like, appliance you turn into?
It seems to be tied, because, like, the kitchen workers are like, tied to... like kitchen appliances and stuff like that. So it seems to be, I think, either whatever you were near, like there was like I keep saying AoE on this podcast, but whatever.
Like, it's an AoE spell.
The witch did an AoE, and whatever like object that you were closest to at the time, your soul went into.
It could be AoE, but it could also be rep, like you built rep with an item, you know, like guild rep. And I think because the cleaners were like the candelabras and, you know, the stuff like that. So I think it's probably also maybe AoE, Kevin, but also maybe just like you built rep with an item.
If you're spec'd for those tools, you get transformed to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or I guess it's like if she turned the prince into a beast because he was a dickhead and she's like, now you look like a dickhead. Or like a predatory member of like the ruling class or something like that. If she was like a more like socialist minded witch or something, which they tend to be if you've met a witch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it could be that like, but then like, all right. So my theory is like it turns you into something that reflects your inner soul, like entering the dark world and Link to the Past.
Oh,
but that like makes these servant people like, oh yeah, in their soul they were always a feather duster.
Yeah, that is supremely messed up by that witch. Like, let the beast suffer his consequences, but don't turn motherfuckers into a plate just because they served him dinner.
Yeah, it's kind of conservative of the witch to essentially say that like the servants are, you know, tied to the fate of the owner.
Yeah, it's like it's like they sinned by working with him.
Sin by association. That sounded a lot better in my mind.
I know exactly what you're going for, and it was blank, dumb.
Sin association. Association.
Association sin. Sin. Yeah, it's hard. There it's you hard go. It's hard to flip over in that one.
So if the witch curses us, are we all turned into like sentient microphones?
Podcast microphones, yeah.
Oh, fuck. I don't know. Fuck. Are we? Dom, you might turn into like a this is me not knowing what equipment you use. Are you turning into like a cool like synth board? What do you turn into?
I'm going to be turning into a legless lizard. Have you ever seen one of these?
What's a legless
lizard? Go ahead and Google a legless lizard. You look at this. It's a snake. And it's just a lizard's head on a snake's body.
It's just a snake. It looks like a snake to me.
Well, it's a snake, but like it's just a lizard's head on a snake's body. So it just looks like a worm.
It's like a snake with really high cheekbones. It's like a handsome snake.
Dom, are you saying you would turn into this because you, that is your inner spirit, or because you're just hanging out with lizards all the time so you could turn into a lizard?
A little bit of both, but I believe because it, deep in my heart, I am a worm with a Y, you know?
Yeah,
like
a dragon worm.
Like a dragonling, that's the closest thing we got to a dragonling these days, is a legless lizard.
I like how you're like, I am cursed by a witch, though, so I must be turned into something realistic.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, I'm going to be trying to turn into something cool, not like... a mantle clock. That's got to be the worst one.
Yeah.
I don't want to be an antique. I want to be
I guess you're just being fragile would suck. I was thinking about this is probably a hacky joke that's been done in a bunch of parodies, but like someone was working on the toilets the day the spell AOE was cast.
Yeah, they kept them out of the Disney movie, thankfully.
Yeah, but like they just turned into a plunger and they're like, well, we don't let you kind of hang out around our first human we've had in 2 decades. You're a shit scoop.
You guys don't remember the scene with Piss Mouth, the toilet?
I think in my head, all right, I have an explanation for this. The toilet just leaves. The toilet's just like, I'm a fucking toilet now. I'm out. I'm gone. I'm leaving the castle.
I am not eating the beast's shit. I'm sorry.
There are 10 other toilets in the house. Use any other toilet but mine. I want to use you.
There's a direct to like VHS sequel of Beauty and the Beast that's just Toilet's Journey. John's journey.
John.
Well, it begins with a little prequel to Beauty and the Beast, where all the appliances and items of the mansion, they would all come together and sing songs. But the Beast was like, you know what? It's a little fucked up that there's like a toilet and a plunger hanging out singing songs too. That part makes me grossed out. Please put those ones deep in the basement and lock them away. And so that's where the movie begins.
They're just down there like Morlocks, unable to ever come up.
Oh, shit.
They're just like, want to leave? Let's go.
I think we should get out of here.
I really think we could find work pretty much anywhere.
Yeah. I'm not feeling respected at this point.
I'm not waiting for this MF to like turn a good heart and fall in love. That's never going to happen. If you've seen what I've seen.
Yeah. Why is our redemption based on like the whims of this rich guy we work for? That seems fucked up.
Damn. That is a commentary for our lives, isn't it?
I think at least a one appliance member would appliance. Yeah. I think one sentient, you know, furniture would have been like, I think the key to us being free is to kill the master.
Put his head in my toilet mouth and slam it over and over again.
Flush the rich.
If I die, I die. Just kill him.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, welcome to Goosebuds. You've already heard his voice. We have a very special guest, one of the original founders of Goosebuds, and permanent camp counselor, Dom. Welcome to rejoin us.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey Dom.
That was like a pregnant hey Dom.
Hey Dom. Ellipsis.
Do you have plans to kill me later, Kevin? Is that what's going on here? Were you hanging out a little serial killer blood, my friend?
Kevin, were you in any car accidents recently with a bus full of prisoners?
No, nothing like that happened. I was driving home by the prison bus expo, and there was some sort of accident, and I saw all this red Kool-Aid on the side of the road, and I was like, oh, sweet, finally something good happening to me today.
Finally something good happened.
I stooped over for a sip of that red Kool-Aid.
Yeah, you just started lapping it up off the asphalt, I guess. That's the only way this possibly works.
Slithering up like a legless lizard, slapping it up.
Kevin, you can be honest with us. You were at the prison bus expo. You go every year. You're like, so this is what it's like to be a prisoner.
All the new ideas they add to prison buses, like double benches. You know what? What an idea! We'll stack the prisoners on top of each other on the bus.
Wow!
Wow! This one's got a USB port, so you can charge your phone. That's pretty cool.
They got a diver. Yeah, I don't feel like going on this bit. I couldn't commit to the idea of the bus driver in a shark's cage. But I guess it was kind of funny. But.
The prison industrial complex is both a real and sad and funny thing to talk about.
I'm happy to have Dom back on the show. I just have serial killer disease right now.
That's okay. We're all a little psychotically diseased today because we watched an episode of Baywatch Nights.
Dom, you introduced us to Baywatch Nights. So would you like to introduce what it is and why it exists?
Yeah, I have to stop myself from doing the insane scream that begins the theme song. Yeah. It's like not scary. It's just like kind of abrasive. I don't know. It sounds like a banshee stepped on a Lego or something.
Yeah, it's so like jarring, but in like a really like stock sound effects sort of way.
But then it goes into the smoothest saxophone and guitar combo that I've heard on television.
Yeah,
ever.
It's based out. You could put this music on and have sex. It's
without
so good.
A doubt.
Yeah, Dom. So obviously you know more because we jumped into season two, but I read that season one. There's a different opening theme called After the Sun Goes Down, performed by Lou Rawls. And
yeah, who was on the show at some point, but I think they got rid of him for Baywatch Nights season two.
Wow.
The original theme song is worth listening to on its own. The concept of the show is quite high. I forget, you know, Chad, there was a stand-up at some point who did a bit about Baywatch Nights, and it was like before YouTube. And before like these episodes were readily available online. So it was like kind of always this mythical thing to me, but essentially Baywatch Nights is exactly what it sounds like. When the sun goes down, David Hasselhoff and a couple of other hot ladies work at a detective agency.
Interchangeable hot ladies.
They have, I mean, and nobody goes to the beach at night, so they're completely bored. They have nothing better to do but solve supernatural crimes.
Well, so in season one, they're just solving crimes.
Right.
You know, the man never sleeps. David Hasselhoff, he's on the beach, then he's like busting criminals at night.
Yeah.
And then in season two, I guess maybe for ratings or just because, you know, the fun of the show. I mean, Hasselhoff is an executive producer and it's pretty clear they have fun on this show. But
yeah,
in the second season, it's all paranormal. So they just made like a fake X-Files.
To clarify, season one had no paranormal. It was just Hasselhoff's Mitch is a lifeguard by day, a PI by night. And then season two is suddenly ghosts everywhere.
Yes. Ghosts, Vikings, cannibalistic mythical creatures,
demon books,
haunted wind.
That's yeah. The next episode, I know you used to give us a bunch, and they were really hard to choose between. I'm glad you picked this one, but yeah, the next episode I played was like frozen in time, and it was definitely Vikings on the docks, and some fishermen going, "Hey, stop eating our fish! Get out of here!"
Yeah,
like a cat. Like a bad cat, they had to get out of there.
Well, that episode rocks because it starts with like 3 minutes of B-roll of like Antarctica, and just like radio voices being like, "We found something. I think it's a couple of bodies. You know, they're frozen in ice over here. Let's get them down to the laboratory." And then, of course, one of them thaws out, and Vikings are on the loose, and David Hasselhoff is running around with a gun that shoots a net. And
Why? Well, if you get a live Viking, the value of that is way higher than a
absolutely,
dead Viking.
Yeah.
Now, I have to spoil this episode.
Okay.
The other Viking thaws out, and the Vikings were fighting. They kill each other, and then David Hasselhoff gives them a Viking funeral on the docks of LA or San Diego, wherever this takes place. But yeah, he says something like, "We took them, you know, we resurrected them, took them from their time, you know, whatever." And then he goes, "They deserve a proper Viking burial." And then his friend lights the arrow and he like aims it for a second and then he goes, Valhalla! It just shoots it, and then just corpses are burning as, like, David Hasselhoff watches.
Dom and I actually watched another episode of this show the other night just to kind of, like, get a feel for it. And you sent me a clip of the main character from that episode who is basically Mitch's partner in the show, Ryan, right?
Yeah.
And Ryan is hilarious. She gets the best lines and delivers them with utmost sincerity, where she talks about number two coming out way faster than they expected.
Is that also? Yeah. Yeah. So there's like two tables. One Viking is thawed out, and she's on the phone with Mitch, and she goes, "Hey, we got a big problem here. Number two's coming out a lot faster than we thought, and then we can't do anything about it." It's like, how many times have we been there, folks?
Relatable. Wow. Relatable.
That's real. That is relatable.
The way she delivers lines in this show, it's just so admirable how committed she is to, like, having fun with it, but also giving it the thespian touch that it deserves.
Well, yeah, this is noticeably, Ryan, who we're talking about, is, I'd say, arguably, if not Hasselhoff, the most famous person on the show, Angie Harmon, you know, infamously, or famously, either Rizzoli or Isles from Rizzoli and Isles. I don't know which one.
I don't even know what that show is, but I trust
two
you.
Women cops, and there's sapphic undertones.
Okay, cool. Ooh. Sick.
But yeah, that's Baywatch Nights as we talk about other episodes revolving it. I mean, it's a really fun show. They're having fun. It's stupid. And the Dutch angle.
Oh my.
You're not going to get more Dutch angles in any other show.
There is no shot where the angle is not Dutched. The angle starts Dutched and gets Dutcher.
Oh, it's not just only Dutch. There's a couple shots, like when Hasselhoff is trying to open the door, it shifted 45 to 135 degrees back and forth. Like, it just kept turning.
That is thematic. It's supposed to be the bay waves rolling.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's a thematic move.
Yeah, you really can tell that they were shooting these episodes in maybe 2 days or one day, because there's no real setup. They're just like always hand cam and just Dutching left and right.
Yeah,
there's a lot of first take energy.
Mm-hmm. First take, best take.
There's a shot at one of these at some point with the doctor who we have to talk about. The doctor on the phone, it's just shot upside down in a mirror for no reason.
Yeah, no reason. I noticed that too the second time I watched it. I was like, why is he like in a lens upside down? What is this?
What is this saying?
You said you like saw somebody doing stand-up about Baywatch Nights. I looked on YouTube, and apart from all the episodes, and it's never illegal to type anything into a search bar.
Yep.
But like apart from all the episodes, I've found nothing on Baywatch Nights. No one is talking about Baywatch Nights.
Well, hey, it's good to be the first people that are talking about this because, I mean, we're PIs ourselves.
Mm.
Yeah.
RL PIs. I mean, I'm honorary for life because I did my time. I got turned into a ghostly pen at some point. but I'm better. I got turned into one of those Sylvester Stallone chaos pens.
Wait, what? Oh my god,
Chad, you've never seen that. Google it right now.
Sylvester Stallone chaos pen?
Yes.
Wow, it came up so fast when I typed. Oh my god. He sold the hell out of these.
What the fuck? Okay, so Chaos Pen is the brand type.
But it's a chaos pen. I mean, there's just chaos on that thing.
It's just skulls and metal snakes.
Yeah,
it's
there
a
are
fancy
souls
pen
in there.
And swords. Okay, I think the snake is wrapping itself around a skull sword.
That's me.
$6,000?
There's some texture to this thing.
Well, you know, when you're signing checks, you're going to need a $6,000 pen.
There's an 18K gold version, a Montegrappa KS roller pen, 18K gold, limited edition, $69,000.
As a fellow Italian, can you also agree that this is the most Italian object to ever exist?
It is so Italian, there's money laundering probably going on.
Well, it's a tax write-off. I mean, everybody needs a pen for their business.
Oh, you'll write it off with the pen. Okay.
Okay, nice. Wait, why were we talking about this?
We were talking about this just because it's what I turned into. And, Baywatch Nights, it's good to be breaking this story.
Yes. Yeah.
This has such tremendous Goosebumps energy as well. Like, I felt the same pains watching this that I do when I'm reading a Goosebumps book. Like, the same kind of, like, I liked this. It's silly and fun, But I felt the same kind of, ah, come on.
Well, it's like, okay, for instance, this episode opens up with our medical examiner at the scene of a serial killer's murder den. And yeah. He's talking about how it looks exactly like, what's his name, Stephen Kempler? Or Stephen
Kempler. Oh, so, yeah, I remember this. Basically, they're saying Stephen Kempler, but like, who's not a real person, but Ed Kempler is a famous serial killer. So they must have intention. They keep saying Kempler throughout this. So they probably wanted to evoke that real life famous serial killer, but probably couldn't say the real serial killer for a multitude of legal reasons.
Yeah, I think they wanted to name another. I think to Chad's point, I think they were trying to name another name that we'll get to in a moment. But yeah.
Okay, so he's looking through and he's seeing the candles, the beaded curtains, incense, all signs of the same serial killer who we will later learn killed his wife. So
the poster of Baphomet.
Yeah, Baphomet's in there. Dude, I love that it ends in the least scary way possible, but they put a scary sting on it so that it feels like it might have been scary.
Yeah.
It's doing heavy work for the end of this scene. But okay, just to bring back to your point, Kevin, about RL style weirdness and nonsense or non sequiturness. Then we go to our main characters, Mitch and Ryan, hanging out at the, I guess, private investigator's office that they opened up after hours of Baywatch.
Well, also, it's above a nightclub called Nights. Oh, I don't know if you caught that. At the end of the episode, you can see them. You can see a neon sign that says Nights with a bunch of people going in.
Now the show makes sense.
Yes. Okay. And now I know why he says Nights will never be the same. It's because they moved in on top of it and they're changing the vibe of Nights, the nightclub.
Well, I think they said that because they changed it to a paranormal show and changed the theme with like having screams and skulls in it. And
oh my God, yeah.
We can talk about the theme. We got to talk about the title sequence in just a moment. Right after this moment where, you know, we cut to the private investigator office and they're doing a back and forth about a dead fish. It's actually pretty funny and the performance is pretty cute.
It is, but it's such a non sequitur, right? Like, ultimately, does it match anything thematically to this episode?
At any point at the end, does Angie Harmon's character, like, keep a fish around? Or, like, is there a moment while she's being attacked by the serial killer where she's like, I gotta save the fish? No.
I was wondering about this too, because the back and forth goes, the fish died of loneliness because we keep putting just one fish in the tank at a time.
Right.
Like, we should get a... I think Hasselhoff's point, or Mitch's point, is like, we should probably get a bunch of fish and put them in the big fish tank.
Right.
Rather than just getting one at a time.
Well, it's pretty funny because they're looking for a lost fish that is dead. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like, the fish died and now it's missing. Mm-hmm. It's just literally just banter for them to just have a back and forth. It doesn't make any sense.
I think most noticeably, there's a knock at the door, and Mitch, jokingly, but also like a dum-dum, goes, well, that must be the fish at the door right now. Mitch, fish can't knock on doors.
Mitch, you silly himbo.
He's in the other episode that we watched too, he has a lot of himbo, even more, because in that episode, Ryan is the star. Now, in this episode, Mitch is the star. It seems like and Dom, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as if the two of them kind of switch back and forth on episode to episode basis.
Yeah, I would say Donna is in.
Oh, Donna, okay.
She's not in any episodes sometimes. Mostly it's just Angie and Mitch. What is her name? Ryan?
I don't know. Yeah, I believe it's Ryan.
It looks like there's an episode of Normal Baywatch she's in that I'm assuming is some sort of cross-promotional, like, now Ryan's visiting the beach of the day.
Yeah, she's in a Dungeons & Dragons episode where they're, like, inside inside some kind of game realm. It's pretty interesting.
Baywatch?
In Baywatch Nights.
Okay, that's all great.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I have to watch that.
We're watching more of these. I'm saying it right now. There's no way we are not revisiting this show.
Yeah, so Dr. Block is trying to contact Donna Marco, who is associated with the Knights is the nightclub.
The PI is the PI. I don't know if there's a name for it, but that's where they work. But they're all Baywatchers who in this universe, it seems as if Baywatchers are very well respected by the police.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe even feared.
Maybe, yeah. Well, he calls out Mitch calls out an APB. He calls the sergeant and tells him to put an APB out, and the sergeant is like, "Yes, sir, I will do that right away."
I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, Mitch called. Yeah.
The police jurisdiction, yeah, they really seem to let PIs handle this case for all intents and purposes, including when a cop gets involved.
Wasn't it on the episode that we watched, Paul, that like cops like trailed down Mitch and were like, hey, man, what's going on with this case? And he was like, I don't know.
Yeah, they like find him. They pull up to him at a stoplight and they're like, Mitch, you gotta help us. We can't figure out what's going on with. They're like completely clueless without Mitch's help.
People are dying, Mitch.
Well, he is a lifeguard.
The part where he taps into his lifeguard sense. Okay,
that's the climax.
We're skipping way too far.
Sorry, I just need to talk. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know when the introduction happens.
Well, shower time now.
Yeah.
Okay, so Block asks Mitch to call Donna. Donna's on the phone, and she's like, yeah, I'm normal. And she's trying on lots of sexy outfits or something like that.
Yeah, she's just in her apartment, like, looking at herself very evilly, mm-hmm. and there's, like, some sexy music going on.
Then Mitch and Ryan are like, we'll go with you to Donna's house, Dr. Block, and he's like, okay, let's go. And then they go.
And then Donna takes a sexy shower to the hottest Jason music you ever heard.
I saw this scene and I was like, step aside, psycho. We got a new dramatic shower scene.
I legit thought this is an interesting idea where the killer and the victim are the same person and in the shower because she's a victim of the serial killer blood, which we'll find out
later. Do really like that shot where some soap is coming down her forehead and it's like splitting her, you know? It's kind of splitting her face, you know?
Shit.
Artistic.
I mean, I was about to say not to overanalyze the scene too much, but Dom, I think you just set the precedent. There's something here where the way I was interpreting this was Donna in this moment is kind of like feeling herself up.
Yeah.
To the point of like, oh, is the serial killer like, did he like Freaky Friday into Donna where he's like, oh, I got boobs for the first time. Doesn't seem to be the case in retrospect.
It's like Silence of the Lambs. It's like, would you fuck me because I'd fuck me type of situation, I think.
We can't know what's happening with Donna because this is a very like shoulders up shower scene. Like, mm-hmm. We barely see shoulder.
You see some side breast at the end of this shot. Don't forget, this is Baywatch, okay?
This still is Baywatch. Yeah.
But so that she's doing her own little dramatic shower sequence, and and then we get a beautiful Dutch angle of Mitch trying to get in, which Dutch's over to Ryan going to the window, and then the doctor looks in and he sees the dreaded candles and Baphomet head that he is seeing everywhere now.
And he goes, candles.
These satanic symbols are so tame. Like, we have more incriminating stuff in our house than this serial killer has.
The skull she has on her mantle, if you can even call it a skull, looks like it came from Pier 1 Imports.
Yes.
Well, she's doing her best. She just got serial killered. So she's
gotta get my spot together, you know. She's doing what she can.
She had to go to Spirit Halloween and grab whatever she could.
Can I just call out the line, because I written this down right before they headed over to Donna's, not to backtrack, but just that when Dr. Block comes over to Mitch, he's like, I'm trying to reach your friend Donna. He's like, come on in. He goes, yeah, you know, listen, tell me what's going on. We're all friends here. And I just loved that as a man I've just met. Just going, I consider you a buddy. I could share anything with you.
I'd feel the same about David Hasselhoff if I had walked into
Yeah, as soon as I see David Hasselhoff, I felt like he was my friend, even as a child. He was my adult man friend on the television.
When I think of, you know, find a trusted adult you can talk to, I think of David Hasselhoff.
Yes.
David
Hasselhoff, I mean, you see a lot of close-ups of his face in the show, and how could you not feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's charming.
So we see the candles, and we get the and wah of the... Of
the theme
main
song
theme, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love this theme song.
Yeah, they find her in they're walking around searching the house. We see a knife pulled up. Well, the doctor finds her ritual knives first, and then we see a knife being pulled from a knife block. The Ryan and Mitch are searching around. They can't find her. Her clothes are laid out. The phone is on the bed from earlier, and then the doctor is attacked by Donna, and she's swinging at him. She's CQCing at him, and and she gets him on the hand, and he says, she cut me!
Also wrote down Chikami.
That was good. That was good.
It's a small, like, she's really bad with a knife in this to a frustrating degree, but I guess that's...
She leaves her cool eBay knives in the other room, yeah, and she has to use a kitchen knife for the rest of the episode.
It may have been a real knife because she's holding it the blunt side always.
I noticed that too, Dom, that there's all, because like when she, in the next sequence that we get to, she definitely is carefully placing the knife against the man's throat.
Yes.
This is not a show that had a safety coordinator of any sort. No.
Okay, so the theme song, we need to talk about the theme.
Yeah
it's incredible. Starts with the Banshee stepping on a Lego.
Yep. There's like some anime PlayStation 1 energy where like half the screen is Mitch walking through a smoky like graveyard.
Mm-hmm. It's Mitch heading to Silent Hill.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. It's his silhouette. We don't see Mitch until the very end of the shot, and he looks great.
Right.
But on the split side of, on the other side of Mitch, it's just rotating various scary objects.
Like rotating skull, rotating wolf head.
Rotating the sleep paralysis demon is there, a statue of him.
There's a monster glove. My favorite of them, I don't know if you guys caught it. Dom, you've probably seen this episode, but it was clearly a clip from one where it's just for 2 seconds. It's Mitch in a car, and a dog pops up in the window and scares him.
Yeah, I haven't seen that episode, but I did see that they used that clip, and I was like, damn, they really just were looking for any jump scare from this show. And they used this one of, like, it was maybe the same dog from Wishbone? We're not sure.
Just like a happy dog popping up and Mitch just screaming. Yeah.
There are so many great shots. It ends towards the end of the intro sequence when they're reaching its climax. There's a great sequence of him in what I think is a sewer pipe running away from an explosion.
That's good.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Only explosion in this show.
No.
At this point, this show, I realized, is probably the main reference point of all things for Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yes.
There's just so many shot for shot things of like, all it took was Mitch. All you needed was Mitch's voice to be ADR'd over by his own actor, and then it would be Dark Place.
That does happen a lot, actually.
There is a lot of ADR in this show too, but there is something else I watched recently, and I was like, damn, this is Dark Place. This is Dark Place written all over it. Maybe Hammer House of Horror. I was watching that. I don't know, but
I don't know that one.
It's just the Hammer who did the Frankenstein and Dracula movies with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. They had a TV series that I think went paranormal at some point, or not paranormal, but rather ESP focused.
Okay.
Anyway.
Cool.
There's some show that does that, but yeah, at the end of the theme of Baywatch Nights, you know, David Hasselhoff, he's now come into the light. You can see his face, and just a voice goes, "Nights will never be the same," and it's great.
He's right,
and we know. Yeah, as soon as he says it, we know he's not lying to us. We know. Things have changed. Nights have changed.
He's a trusted adult.
This show is kind of the reason why the Sega CD game Nights into Dreams failed, as everyone was expecting a different type of night.
Yeah, they were going for a tie-in. I just want to say there is a credit that follows the sequence. One of the very first credits is for a man named, or a woman, I don't know, Dorian Gregory.
Whoa!
Yeah!
Which is an incredible name. I mean, if you're, that's like a drag name, Dorian Gregory.
Yes, Dorian Gregory. Yeah, there's some really great names. There's also Michael Areola, who's on this show.
I also saw Michael Areola.
It's Miles Areola.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
And my friend, you're an actor. You can go by any name. Don't go by Nipple, okay? Don't be Miles Nipple.
It's incredible. Okay, so Donna grabs the knife, runs into her driveway,
peels out
in her car. And is like driving with like one hand on the knife and also on the wheel, mm-hmm. like just like knife driving.
Like a professional killer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she gets away. And then we have a brief section where the blood science is explained by the doctor, which I thought was incredible. Who would like to explain the blood science?
I have a lot of notes about this, so I might be able to run through
Let's hear it.
Mitch asks the pertinent question, what the hell is going on? And Dr. Block is like, an 18-wheeler plowed into a prison bus. The bus was carrying Kepler. A few people must have touched his serial killer blood.
Yeah, I think he says that Donna was helping out at the scene of the accident.
She was in.
Also, Donna never mentioned this to you, Mitch, that a couple days ago she was in a horrific
I think it was
car accident.
Chad, I think it was 4 months ago. I think at some point they mentioned that this happened 4 months ago, because I think they mentioned it at the beginning of the episode that it was 4 months ago this happened. So Donna never mentioned it. She was in the accident. She is she suffered from the accident, but also got out, and because of her Baywatch training, instantly started helping the survivors of the accident.
Yeah. She drank as much blood as she could to give her the quick energy she needed.
Yeah, it wasn't even a blood transfusion. It was just the blood's all mixed in the accident.
She sucked up blood into her mouth and kept it in her cheeks and spit it back into the mouths of people who desperately needed blood.
Like a lifeguard is trained to do. Yeah.
Now, gamers listening to this, your ears might be perking up and going,
blood points?
This sounds kind of like the plot of Arkham Knight. You know, you might be thinking blood points from Dead by Daylight, but in Arkham Knight, this is kind of a major plot that Joker gives everyone Joker blood and they all start turning into the Joker.
They 100% had to have watched this episode to get that.
It's just such a crazy idea that I was like, but even the Joker's plan made more sense. But this is similar, just the blood turns you into a serial killer. It's fantastic.
I was impressed when Hasselhoff looked right at the camera and said, "We are born of the blood, made men by the blood, undone by the blood." I was like, wow, Bloodborne really just ripped it all off, huh?
But yeah, so that's the blood science. They really did infect people. Now there's, I guess, several serial killers out there. And Donna is one of them. Mm-hmm. This doctor's trying to track it down, break up the cycle.
I actually have a question really quick, because I'm not a medical expert. Can you catch serial killer from someone's blood?
Yes. I mean, the show proves.
Okay.
Yeah.
If they
put
it on TV, it's got to be real.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it makes emotional sense that that would happen.
Kevin, they had a doctor in the show, so clearly that doctor would not, a doctor can't lie.
No writer would ever write anything without consulting a truth teller to make sure.
That's a really good point, Paul, because the science really is in line with a lot of science that people get into these days. You know what I'm saying? The anti-science.
Sure. For sure. Which is the true science.
I mean, prove them wrong. Let me see the study.
Can I just give a pat on the back to Mitch and Ryan here in this episode, who are finding out about this crazy but scientific blood science, and they immediately roll with it. There is no like disbelief. There is no testing the theory. There is no even giving Donna the benefit of the doubt that this guy is a bit of a quack. They are like, shit, she's a serial killer.
Everyone in this episode goes down a logical path, a logic ladder, and they follow it on a single route and accept where they get on pure intuition alone, and it always is correct.
Well, I mean, Donna would not attack a strange doctor in her house with a knife for no reason.
Never, never, no way.
No.
You know, she was just taking a shower.
Yeah.
And now she's attacking a stranger in her home. I mean, she would have to have a reason to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned that the doctor has reason to pursue this whole Kempler thing because his wife was murdered. His wife was a victim of Kempler's
He explains spirit. Kempler's habit, which was like picking up women and then taking them on a date and then killing them, which means that like, bro, I'm sorry, but Kempler stole your girl. I mean, literally did kill her and her life. I mean, not to, you know.
The Chad Kempler and the virgin Dr. Block.
It's spoken about in casual ways that way. It's like, well, I guess Kempler was kind of a little bit more interesting than you, man.
And, maybe if the doctor was a more passionate lover, his wife would still be alive, so.
Dom, the part you talked about of where he talks about Kempler's methods is so long and rambling. He doesn't just say, like, you summarized it very well. I wish that's how the doctor said it. Instead, just proceeds to list all of the nice things you could do for a person you just met. He's like, he offered them rides. He'd buy them drinks.
He complimented them in the park.
Take them out for a nice day. Compliment them in the park. Shine their shoes. It just kept going. All of these like nice things Kepler would do.
There's a very good reason for this, and I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the credits are still going along the bottom of, the episode.
For 15 minutes.
15 minutes into the episode, we are still getting co-producer credits and director credits.
Yeah, that goes on almost every episode. It goes on even longer in some episodes. It's incredible.
It's so funny because like there's a big like gap in between each of them. So like every time one like flashes back in, I'm like, still?
The producers demanded there be boring scenes for their names to appear later in the episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a great moment where after hearing the breakdown of the killer's habits, Ryan goes, well, I got bad news for you guys. Donna's hot as hell and she can have any man she wants. And then it cuts to Donna in her convertible, like sexily looking at like a hunk who just walked out of hair and makeup who is hitchhiking.
He looks like a wrestler, like a 90s wrestler.
Yeah.
He looks so good. He's the hottest hitchhiker that's ever tried it. He looks incredible.
She says nothing to him, cut to him getting in the car with her, which I get it. It's Donna DiDierico.
Hot people are attracted to each other that way, Chad. I'm sorry, but that's science.
They talk through their looks. They don't need to talk through their words.
And none of us are qualified to handle the gender commentary on this idea, but just the sheer concept that, well, Kempler was a man and he hunted women, so when it goes into a woman,
yeah, right,
a woman kills man, it's just like, yeah. I I was watching with Heidi, we were both like, no, this is obviously trash TV, but kind of an interesting idea. A serial killer is in a woman's body and a bunch of other women will trust this woman, right? Like she can, she actually has like a huge advantage now, but instead it's just like, oh no, I'm just gonna try to pick up dudes coming out of LA Fitness.
But we learned that it's like the Kempler like blood is like fighting the original personality. So like the Kempler is like blood is like trying to work with aspects of Donna's personality.
Right.
So it kind of makes sense that she'd still pick up men.
Well, and Donna is strong. Donna is fighting constantly, which we do see because she picks up this man and she puts the blade to his throat, blunt side first. And then she puts it to his throat, is planning to kill him, and then calls Mitch.
Yeah, because that's what I'd do if I was.
She is switching allegiances, like morality alignments, every sentence.
Right.
Well, you see, there's a struggle within her. After she flees the scene, she's having a hard time trying to understand what she just did. But then, of course, the killer takes over. She picks up this guy, feels obliged to call Mitch. And she starts kind of going on about what she's dealing with. Uh-huh. And
sex and death.
Yeah, she says, I have this crazy need. It's all sex and death.
That one's great. That line's great. I also love, Mitch, I have somebody with me. I think I'm going to kill him. And then she gets into the sex and death thing. And then she says, I have to kill him. Goodbye, Mitch.
I love how Hunk is just like, geez, lady, you're going a little far, ain't you? Like,
his nonplussed reactions are great. Cause so she tries to get to kill him. She grabs him by the hair after she hangs up, pulls him out of the car, even though he is clearly probably very strong and probably able to defend himself. But he goes along.
She has a knife and serial killer blood.
That's true. That's true. And she does know how to hog tie, and she hog ties him.
Well, no, she doesn't. Not simply hog tie. I saw some intricate knots that I've only seen in Japanese bondage.
She BTKs him.
In Elysian Park, it is, would seem. I believe the show is shot in San Diego, but they go to the Culver Theater and they mention Santa Monica in this episode. So maybe, it felt like Elysian Park. She ties him up and is getting ready to kill him. But of course, Mitch, when before the phone call hangs up, he goes,
"Oh my God!
Oh, I heard an airplane on the call. There was a Baywatch training ground that we use that planes would fly over. Let's go there.
It's wonderful. It's again, he connects a couple logical dots as quickly as possible. It's like speed Sherlock Holmes, right? And like he just speeds to the logical conclusion as quickly as possible and follows his intuition, and he's never wrong.
There's not even a second dot to connect.
No.
It's just, I heard a plane, I know where she is.
Mm-hmm. And so they speed over there in his GMC Yukon, and
which he's always driving in the show.
Did you guys notice that he got like the tires to end with like the logo facing up when he stopped perfectly?
Oh, I didn't. That's beautiful though.
I bet Hasselhoff made them do it multiple shots every time to be like, it's got to end on the logo.
He's an executive producer, so it was probably a sponsor that he got that free car.
For sure. Yeah. It's a hot car. And he shows up just in time because now we did get a line that Donna is enjoying this. She's going to slowly enjoy. She's not going to kill him quickly. She's going to enjoy this process. So she is taking her time. It makes sense that they would be able to get to her before the murder. And just as they arrive, is right as she's beginning to stab, she stabs the gun again. No safety protocols on this shoot. She stabs a real knife next to this man's head. It goes into the ground and he dodges out of the way. Then they arrive and she runs off. I think she fights against it, right?
They do some kissing and then she runs away to barf.
Yes, that's right.
Because she feels the evil inside her body. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to spit out some chicken soup.
So she spits out chicken soup. She runs off and Mitch and Ryan show up and Mitch pulls the man out where he goes, "Lady is freaked out of her gourd, man."
Every one of his lines are 8 yard.
It's it's so beautiful. And the man is so nonplussed by what's happening to him.
He honestly, he's so nonplussed that when she starts to run away to throw up her chicken soup, mm-hmm. like, he's actually yelling after her, like, "Ma'am, are you okay? I can help." It genuinely felt like he was trying to be like, "I think you're doing this murder wrong. I should give you some advice."
I swear to God, it's somebody else's voice. It's not that guy's voice.
No, totally. But still, the sweetest and hottest hitchhiker of all time.
He doesn't even press charges either. He's like, "No, the rules should be different for hot people, so I will not press charges."
Well, hot code would not allow me to sue her or do any sort of prosecution against her.
So. No, she's like resolved off screen, right? Like Mitch chases after her.
We will get to the result.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the moment to talk about it. She flees, Mitch chases after her, and she like slashes at Mitch a couple times
in a beautiful low frame rate sequence.
Yep.
Yeah, and the only way to break someone's possession is to yell your name in their face over and over again.
Uh-huh. It's Mitch.
And then she's like, "Mitch, I hurt you." And he's like, "It's all right." And then we cut to possibly the best scene in the show. Chad, you want to describe this part?
Incredible moment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the part that I most remember is, the next day.
It's later. It's an hour later, Chad. Yeah.
Okay. Is this all one night, I guess? I'm assuming. Yeah. Okay. So it's always
this is one night. Baywatch night, my friend.
No, this is a day. Everything we've seen so far has happened during the day.
It's been a lot of daytime.
Right.
This is starting to become the kind of like, listen, if you read a lot of X-Men comics, you're like, there's no way Wolverine is on all of these teams at the same time. There's no way he's in Genosha and also in space. He just can't be.
That's Mitch right here.
What's happening with Mitch? Yeah,
it's he's incredible.
So in the unnamed PI office, Ryan and Mitch are talking about how Donna has gone to the hospital. There are no charges.
She didn't go to the hospital. She's in the next room.
Is she in the next room?
He comes in and plops down on the couch and says, "She's stable." So, and that sounded like she's in the next room, but maybe she's at the hospital.
I assume there was a hospital because they said they replaced all of her blood. They're removing Kempler's blood.
The exact quote is, "They're currently removing any traces of Kempler's blood from her body, as if they were able to transfuse out exact portions of blood."
Which, good news, guys. If you could do that, you could probably cure AIDS and plenty of other horrible diseases that plague human existence.
Again, this is what Batman is doing with the Joker blood in Arkham Knight. He is trying to remove the Joker blood. It is so funny.
The fact that, like, they have to remove the blood is funny, and they're not like, we're injecting her full of saint blood. Like,
right.
She's full. We have Mother Teresa giving her a blood transfusion. Uh-huh. That shouldn't even
it
should
have been out. Mitch's blood. He's like, "I gave her some of my blood. She's going to be okay."
That would be great to have a show that's exactly like this, but the main character is secretly Christ, and, like, every once in a while, like, things are resolved by his blood or flesh.
Uh-huh, yeah. By feeding a bit of himself.
He'd be like, "You know what I could go for? A foot wash right about now."
That is such a good detective show, Dom. We need to sell this to Los Angeles.
Jesus Christ, private investigator. So they find out there's a...
Biblical Knights. How about that? No, all right.
They find out there's another Kemplerite out there, Ray Reagan.
While we're learning about how Donna is being healed, Dr. Block is on the phone finding out about the new killer.
and that we won't be seeing her again in this episode. They make it very clear.
It's crazy that she's not in the rest of the show at all.
She got the rest of the day off. Okay?
She's wrapped. She's been wrapped already. We can't have her.
Wouldn't she have more of a stake in solving this murder and crime than anyone, right? Like, shouldn't this be Donna's story?
She's been sedated. She's out of the show right now.
She had a big day.
Yeah.
I gave her a juice box and she's going to
sleep. She's currently feeding on some salad and she'll be okay. Yeah.
But we learn about Ray Reagan or Ray Regan, I think.
Yeah, Regan.
Yeah, I think it's Regan.
Regan.
And couldn't help but notice, kind of sounds a little familiar to a certain actor and president.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
We'll get more into that detail in a moment. Okay. I'll let you continue there, Kevin.
There's some commentary happening here.
There's a little bit.
And Mitch goes, I'm going. And
well, the funny part is he's like, Dr. Block, call the cops. And the doctor's like, there's no way they'll listen to me. I'll do this myself. And Mitch is, and Mitch tries to think about a way to like come back at that. And he's like, I'm coming with. And he just leaves with them.
Because he knows the cops are useless. They're always coming to him.
That's true. That's true.
And Angie Herman, because the plot needed her to be, you could see her Ryan just kind of go like, well, I guess I'll just stay here. And like, she just kind of like, you could feel her actor almost just like, well, fuck me then, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
We're trying to be a legitimate business here. I guess I will do paperwork while you run after serial killer blood.
Got to find that fish.
Yeah. We go to Regan's house and we meet his lovely wife, and we get a low Dutch angle of a cop car pulling up the street. And we learn that Regan is a cop, that he's in SWAT.
Very important detail that he's in SWAT.
Yeah. Why was SWAT at the scene of the crime of the accident?
Well, he was at the prison bus expo.
They were probably guarding the bus because you need a SWAT member because prisoners are always breaking out.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, yeah. They're always doing Con Air shit. Yeah. That's right.
So he was there. He was at the scene of the crime. They find that out towards the end of the scene. The cop car pulls up, runs the plates, gets the numbers associated with the plates, then calls the PI office, to which Ryan answers the phone.
Yeah, the dispatcher does go, got a lot of numbers for this guy. Baywatch, the PI Knights department. It's like, this guy is busy.
It says here he's got a musical career, too. Boy, this guy's interesting.
So this kind of puts, like, Cop Kepler as, like, the anti-Mitch, as, like, his shadow Mitch.
Right, shadow Mitch.
Sure. Yeah.
Because he does private investigator stuff right back at him,
right,
and tracks him down, and then he's like, he's got to have a sexy lady hanging out in his private investigator.
Well, that was
office.
The funny part, because she answers the phone and he's getting details from her, and I guess he just hears her voice and is like, this is the kind of lady I'm after, and she says
but yoing 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 when he hears her voice, and then he hangs up.
she says, can I help you? And he says, I think you can, and then hangs up. Then Mitch sees him drive off, and he finds out that Regan was a SWAT member, and he suddenly puts the pieces together. They're going for Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you're right. You know, Regan's wife is like, my husband did tell me about that accident in the prison bus, and he also just drank a bunch of blood off the ground. Yeah, he thought it was Kool-Aid.
He was thirsty, and we were in a car accident.
It's a common mistake to drink the Kool-Aid off the side of the highway when there's a car accident.
The cop goes and abducts her.
Yeah, he just grabs Ryan, and Ryan kicks over a bunch of stuff in the office to let Mitch know there was a struggle, and then they leave. The doctor is like, holy shit, he's got Ryan.
He knows instantly. He knows as soon as he sees
the
room.
And he starts to have a freak out, and he's like, you didn't see what he did to my wife.
This is a great moment because it is written as if it is a massive reveal, but it really is just the...
Like, Mitch is like, you never told me about that, and he actually fucking did. Like,
well, because so he told him that the serial killer killed his wife, but the thing he didn't reveal was that he didn't just kill his wife as a part of his process. He killed him as a personal vendetta against Dr. Block for looking in and following his, like, chasing him.
Oh, okay.
Again, he's not a fucking cop. He's a medical examiner.
Right. I don't know why this was such a major moment, but the bit of plot detail that this provides is to imply that the reason Regan has grabbed Ryan is because he somehow knows that Mitch is chasing him and he's made it personal now.
Yeah.
So Mitch pokes the redialer on his phone and gets the police
dispatch. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he gets a dispatch and he's like, oh, now I get it.
I know it's Regan. Yep.
And somehow he knows that they went to the movie theater.
It's incredible. Oh,
I loved this scene. The same way to top the I heard a plane, I know where they are.
Yeah.
It is. They're like, well, Kepler will always take his victim somewhere, abandoned. Quick, let's list all the abandoned places in Los Angeles. He's like, a church is on a non-Sunday. Library is closed at night. That one cinema in Culver. And Mitch is like, that's it. It's at the cinema. And they go to the cinema.
That's the closest one, I guess. So
yeah, sure enough. This guy fucking loves movies. I mean, it's hard to parse. Was it Kempler that loved movies, or was it R. Regan?
We never figure out if this cop just really loved movies or if Kempler really likes movies.
We have a hard time because in the ride to the theater, Regan is talking to Ryan, and she's like, who are you? You could fight against this. And he goes, no, I like this. He's already merged both mentalities together, so it's truly a melange of the two men.
In true cop fashion.
We basically have a double serial killer in this body.
We do.
I do, probably unintentionally, I do like the commentary that, a cop is much more able to get into the idea of just killing people indiscriminately. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's how I interpreted that.
Oh, then yeah. There's some good cop lines that are coming up, which we'll get to.
And there's some really, mid-movie taste opinions happening.
Well, I love, he gives a little movie history. Dom, I'm sure you appreciated this, because I know you love the 70s of movies, but he starts talking about Bonnie and Clyde and
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Well, those are two that he names. Those are two that he names as, the story started to change, he names a bunch of classics like Gone with the Wind, West Side Stories, loved that one, he's literally making this woman go on a date with him.
right. He is mansplaining the sea change in Hollywood when we went from pre-code Hollywood to post-code.
He's like, we don't make good movies anymore.
He gets on the stage and he starts diatribing in the moonlight. He's doing his best thespian thing. I love that he turns to Ryan and says, the smell of the popcorn.
I love the popcorn.
And he's taking her around. He's like, lovers sit in the upper booths, in the balcony booths. And he takes her up there and does more creepy shit. And he's waiting for Mitch to arrive because he knows Mitch is coming.
Really the Joker to Mitch's back.
This is a really big Joker. It's very big Joker energy. He's Joker-fied.
I mean, Mitch comes in and he sets a trip wire and the wire sets off a flashbang.
Incredible.
I love how slow the trip wire activates the flashbang.
Yeah. You watch, there's a shot going up the wall of the electric, the electricity moving at a snail's pace.
You can hear the hiss of the electricity moving through the wires. It's
funny.
Come
on, guys.
Shit.
The theater's abandoned, okay? They don't have that much electricity in there.
They got slow electricity.
It's also not until the second or third trip wire that Mitch stumbles into that Angie, yes, I know there's a knife to her throat, but she has the freedom to speak, finally yells, Mitch, the whole place is booby-trapped!
Yeah. And so he gets hit with the flashbang, he's blinded, then he gets hit with a concussion grenade, which is the best because he flies off of the stage.
Action.
It is, and he can't hear, and the cop Kepler, blood cop Kepler is he may be blinded permanently or deafened permanently. I have fucked him up.
Aren't cop toys just the best?
I've taken his sight from him. Now I've taken his concussion grenade was second. Right. So I guess his hearing.
Now this is when the episode becomes truly incredible and art.
Yeah, what I was like, what the fuck is Mitch going to do? He's bested here. But then Mitch remembers his training.
Night dives.
Yeah, and we see an overlay. He gives himself, that's in true David Hasselhoff fashion. Only David Hasselhoff can coach him out of this situation. And he's like, get it together, Mitch. Focus,
I actually thought this would have been an incredible scene if there wasn't the voiceover over it, if it was just the overlay of him doing a night dive.
Yeah.
And they let us do the mental work on
it. If the sound design came up to just
totally
night dive noises.
Yeah. Get a couple bubbles and stuff.
Yeah. But it is still really funny and really hilarious because he's like coaching himself through the knife. You can't see, you can barely hear. And he's like,
yeah,
he's like, follow the noises, Mitch. And she's screaming because Ryan is screaming because the cop Regan is now he's feeling a little his hubris is kicked in and he thinks he's got him. And he's letting her scream things to him and he follows the sound. And then it's pretty quick and pretty abrupt. He just beats Regan's ass.
Yeah. There's no step two to the follow your training. His training is Ryan duck, and then he like hits the cop with a 2x4.
Does he even? I didn't even hear him say duck. It just seemed like Regan just goes around a blind corner, and Hasselhoff just screams and runs at him and tackles him.
Yeah, he gives him a good scream.
Yeah,
he punches
that's right.
The absolute shit out of the cop.
And he's punching him so hard.
And Ryan's like, Mitch, stop. Like, stop punching him. Don't kill him. And I'm like, oh my God. Because if he gets blood on him, he will.
I didn't think about that.
Oh, that would have been so good.
The Kepler blood. But they didn't go into that. They didn't, they didn't really touch on that. It was just don't kill him for more. It's bad to kill a person.
It's bad to kill him because he's not actually Kepler. You know, he's just possessed, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, Mitch replies, he deserves to die.
The hits are so heavy on this. Like, this is kind of a brutal scene.
Those were real punches. Those were real punches. Again, there was no safety coordinator. Hasselhoff threw a real...
That actor died from pummeling.
Not as important, but I think it's also worth noting that as Mitch walked around through this background of this abandoned theater, I guess, there's just like... Has Kepler cop already been there for weeks? Because it's just like filled with satanic imagery and like Halloween knives with blood.
Yep.
Yeah.
Apparently he's already doing killings. People. Yeah. He's already stealing. He's already finding people and killing people. So that's implied that there's already multiple serial killers out there working right now.
Yeah. We learned there's a 4 month incubation period, right?
Right.
Like the crash happened 4 months ago.
Right.
Give or take. Yeah.
It's a bit of that movie Cure. That Japanese movie.
Yeah, I love that movie.
It's like, that movie's excellent if you haven't seen it.
It really is. It's incredible.
Do we have any more on being the shit out of cop Kepler?
That's it. Yeah, and then they're back at the PI office and Mitch is relaxing. There's a fish over his shoulder, you know.
There's
they
a
brought
fake,
the fish
a fake
back.
Fish not moving in the fish tank.
And they get a hilarious letter from Regan's wife where she says, "Thank you for beating up my husband."
Well, it's like David Hasselhoff is so charming. They're like, "Thanks for beating the shit out of my husband, you hot
hey, man."
This show, I was saying this to Dom the other night when we watched an episode. This show, if you've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there's a scene where they explain star power and how things that happen in shows and movies aren't just plot devices, but they're actually devices to increase or diminish people's star power, which is a real thing.
And that's real, yeah.
It's very real.
As Chad knows... Vin Diesel has it in his contract that he cannot lose a fight on camera.
I was going to say, I was going to bring that up because he's insecure about the size of his star power, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
It's David Hasselhoff is being put over so hard in these, especially the episode that Dom and I watched where the cop, I was like, Dom, do you realize that this implies that this man who is outside the law is more powerful than the police is just like such a hilarious put over. And in this episode, it's also the same thing, Dom, it's exactly what you said. This wife is thanking him for beating her husband's ass back into sense.
Thank you for beating the serial killer out of my husband.
It is truly a peek into the real guy that is David Hasselhoff.
Yes.
I mean, he's an executive producer.
Right.
Well,
right.
They did subject David Hasselhoff to both a flashbang and a concussion grenade. Those were not faked. Those were real, effects.
Those were real.
He did his own stunts.
And he did recover within 15 minutes. So.
Yeah. Not to go back to that, I just would have loved the way that Cap Kepler was really like, I took his sight and I took his hearing. I suppose he just like had grenades to take his other senses, and now he can't taste anything. Pepper bomb.
He should have taken all 5 senses from him. That would have been incredible.
Yeah, the last one.
He's just a brain in a jar.
But again, no consequences. It sounds like Cop Kepler... probably going through the same magic transfusion process.
Of course.
Not responsible for any of these murders, even though, I mean, I don't know if you guys want to debate the legality of this, even if a court was going to recognize possession, I think there's still some level of, like, manslaughter charges for Kempler here. He said he likes it.
I don't know, Chad. Possession is 9/10 of the law.
Damn.
Wow.
Shut it down.
Can't argue with facts.
There's one last detail that this episode gives us that I think is hilarious, and I think it's kind of thrown away. They receive a call from the precinct, and when she gets off the phone, and Ryan gets off the phone, Mitch is like, is there another one out there? And she says, yes, a 14-year-old boy was in the accident.
A 14-year-old girl.
Or it was a girl. A 14-year-old girl was at the, which, and then Mitch is like, let's do it. And it just implies that they're going to beat the shit out of a 14-year-old at the end of this episode.
He's not even gung-ho, though. He's kind of just like, all right, this again, womp womp. Like,
it would be great to see him enter, like, a clubhouse or, like, a treehouse, like, looking for her. Hitting like little kid traps.
Yeah, like Home Alone traps at him.
Just, yeah. Just, oh, I thought you were going to say, like, showing up at the playground and just like shooting Star, a 14-year-old girl, just like taking her down off the top.
Uh-huh. It's an incredible ending for an incredible episode of television. And then we get the credits, which Dom and I were commenting on the other night, which is just a mirror effect of a saxophone guy.
Yeah, you can put this. I mean, this is music. A lot of people are doing this now, but yeah. Guys are putting on what they call jack off music. It's just like room music for when they're masturbating. And this is some peak jack off track.
Yeah, I believe this is what the kids nowadays are calling jombiance, which is jack off ambiance.
J-O-Beyonce.
J-O-Beyonce.
I think this is what 100 Gex sounds like.
Chad, only you would know.
Super 100 Gex now.
What an incredible episode of television.
What a time. What a time to be alive.
What, they don't make TV like this anymore.
No, and that is actually a tragedy, I think.
This is the television that would come on a hot summer day, mm-hmm. and you're like, damn, all I can do is sit inside and be in the AC and watch TV. And this is what they're playing. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what the hell is even on TV right now?
You can feel a layer of cocaine over this entire place.
Yeah, a cocaine scene, for sure.
A dust. Yeah. A dusting.
A dusting.
That is something different about this and the works of R.L. Stein, is you don't really get the cocaine very much in R.L. Stein's work.
No, he doesn't. He does hold that back from the children, thankfully.
But you can tell that he's hopping on topic to topic, you know? Like, he's pivoting. He's just rolling with it. And he's just like, well, that's just the way it is. Next page.
Yeah, he's free associating. And every free association that he has is brilliant.
It's got a Goosebumps ramble.
It does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It felt very Goosebumps. Honestly, that final tag of, oh, there was one more kid we forgot to check, the 14-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like a Goosebumps book ending.
Oh, my God. You're right.
For sure.
And just like the Goosebumps TV show, it's got a killer theme.
He's right. It's truly neglected, a neglected theme that needs to be made more well known. I hope we can help to raise its profile a little bit today.
Was this the first show to add the Knights like subtitle to itself?
I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if this was the start of that kind of meme that you hear for decades later. Yeah.
I wonder.
I don't know. It's impossible for us to find out.
Well, never. There's no way to know.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Dom, is there, obviously, you know, you're our resident Baywatch Nights expert. Like, is there, and I want to ask you like another 5 hours of questions, but your time is valuable. I was going to ask, like, is there ever a major arc? Obviously, this cop was almost Mitch's Joker. Is there ever like a recurring antagonist or like a haunted skull that keeps taunting Mitch?
A cigarette smoking man.
There is an episode about somebody whose family drowned, and so they're getting back at Mitch by like committing some kind of crime or murder or something. Mm-hmm. So there is like a character from, you know, a dark character from my past kind of episode. There is one episode, I haven't watched it yet, but it's like Mitch and somebody else get transported to future Earth where it's just barren. And I really need to see that episode, because how does his lifeguard training get him out of that one?
Yeah. There's no water. He's completely...
There's no water.
Oh my God. It's like when you put Spider-Man on a flat middle Midwest plains, he has nothing to swing from.
Yeah, he doesn't know how to walk anymore. He just like falls over.
It's all beach. It's just beach.
His mouth just starts going up and down like a fish without water to breathe.
He starts breaststroking through the sand.
do they do like a sea monster or like a merman episode or something like that?
I think there is a water monster episode.
All right, sick.
We are certainly going to watch more of this. Dom, I want to thank you for bringing this to the show. It was truly hilarious, and I hope that we can do more of these.
Yeah, hey, I'll come back for the night. When I saw this, I watched this episode that we watched today as the first one, and it blew me away. I couldn't help but think of my friend Chad and how much he would appreciate how just fast and loose this show is with its pocket. Pocket explanations and then going, yes, okay. It feels like it's improvised.
Dom, while I was watching this, honestly, even though I watched it in early Saturday morning, I was transported in my mind to your place, having just picked up some In-N-Out and smoked a little J, and now watching this with you. That's how I felt.
It's exactly our speed, my friend. So that's why I had to bring this to the table, see if you guys were interested. I'm happy you were.
It was great. I think that's been a bump, right?
Yeah, we bumped it.
We bumped.
Dom, I mean, it's been great having you back. Again, please join us again as soon as you want for more nights. Do you have anything listeners should be like checking out new stuff? I mean, I've been saying like you've been pumping out some great music. Like, where should people go to listen to that?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I don't produce any of my own music. Maybe one day, but I got really into DJing the past few years, and it's been a lot of fun. My SoundCloud is DJ Silkworm. Silkworm with a Y, the legless lizard style.
Oh my God.
And I love that name.
Thank you. I appreciate that you like it, Jed. And I started a little radio show. I love radio. You know, most music, dance music that you listen to, it's like an hour-long mix of just great tracks. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I like to get on the microphone a little bit and talk. I've got the voice for it, so I appreciate that. I appreciate getting introduced to tracks sometimes. So I'm doing a little show on there called Club Jelly, and it's some loose mixing, and then get into some tighter mixing and, you know, just have fun. Hopefully you can turn people on to some fun music.
Nice, man.
Beautiful.
That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a fun project. I do. And then, of course, I'm always doing Paperback Paradise and associated merch for it. Mm-hmm. I just came out with a new bumper sticker that people really loved and Facebook absolutely hated.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a bumper sticker that says, "Reading books homosexualized my son." And at first, you know, Facebook was like, great, because it was just like my audience that saw it. And then it appeared on other people's timelines and they were like, "You queers are sick." I made the bumper sticker to be stupid so that when you look at it, you're like, wait, are you mad or are you happy that it happened? Like, it's ambiguous.
It's a mirror to society. You know, yes, they look at it and they see what's true about them.
Yep. I mean, it really came out on Facebook. I felt really bad for Facebook people because they really do seem like prisoners.
Yeah, you can't help them, Dom. Don't put that on you.
I can't. You're right. And I feel bad for them. But like, yeah, some of the comments were downright hateful. And then against queer folks like myself. And another portion of the comments were just, you know, people who, you know, are allies, as you may call them. Mm-hmm. But they mistook it completely. And they were like, no, your son was born gay.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yes.
my son also doesn't exist in this.
That's the other part of it. It was like that was my big takeaway is like, who are you people talking to?
Yeah. Themselves.
I mean, it truly is. It made me think a lot about the ways in which we are prisoners of these places.
Prisoners of the algorithm.
Yes.
It makes me think about how we feel compelled to speak just because we're allowed to, when we could just say nothing.
Yes. You know? Yes.
If we find something funny, we could be like, that's really funny. But like, if we were like, oh, this angers me, better make my beliefs known instantly.
Yes. I better lay out my entire philosophy about life, you know.
Yep.
A chance for me to shine.
Well, that's the best, is whenever I post something and then somebody posts like some other Photoshop they found online, some other meme. It's like, are you trying to speak to me? I'm not sure what this was about. I don't want to see this.
Someone was talking and I want to talk now too.
Yeah. Oh, we're telling jokes. Here's my joke. It's not mine. I found it, but here it is.
Dom, can I request upcoming Paperback Paradise merchandise?
Go ahead.
Could you make a chaos pen?
Oh my God. There needs to be a chaos pen.
Paul and I have been at the forge, hammering the chaos
pen. Going to Joann Fabrics, buying all the sculpty clay.
I'm in there day and night sculpting legless lizards.
I know. I have showed up today dripping with chaos sweat. I could barely stand while we did
it. It's
this.
Purple, by the way.
It's purple. Yeah, it's purple. Wow. But yes, we'll get you your chaos pen, Chad.
Yeah, Chad, we'll get you that. I mean, $69,000 is way too much money, so I'll get you one.
Yeah, I'm assuming I get a little friend discount on that $69,000.
Oh yeah.
I think that's been a buds. Also, please check out Dom's stuff. Also, if you want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/goosebuds, get access to Camp Goosebuds, our bonus episodes, our Discord, weigh in on our Patreon and affect the course of the show. We just wrapped up Goosebumps 2000, are figuring out what books to cover next. Honestly, I wish we could just watch Baywatch Nights for the rest
We're
of the
time. We're doing more. It's happening. We're doing
Chad, you should write an episode of Baywatch Nights.
I would fucking love. I would. Oh, so much interesting stuff.
Because the great thing is, it's like first idea. That's the one you go with.
Best idea.
Yep. I don't know, Chad. That sounds like it could take up to 45 minutes to write that thing. So
it could be 46 or 47, my friend. Don't get into this.
It's crazy. This is a 44 minute show. This is such a 22 minute show. Kevin, you just dropped a new game, and I'm sure you have other stuff you want to share.
Yeah, hi, I'm Kevin. I made a video game again. I made a game called Gigmaster, where you are filling in for a Mega Man style mini boss on his day off, and you can play it for free on supertryit.itch.io. I made another game earlier this year called Wizard Laws. That's been getting a little bit more attention too, where you play a wizard who has to navigate around various strange laws in a puzzle platformer type scenario. All these games are available on my itch page, so if you want to go and play some video games, please do.
You need to say that itch page again, because it came out as one word.
Supertry.itch.io is
there.
The place
we go
to go, or you can go to supertrystudios.com. That is also the same thing. And if you play my games and you really, really like them and you're familiar with me and we've been hanging out for a while, feel free to go to givekevinmoney.com and send me a dollar and ensure that I can make more weird art about Mega Man and maybe other things too.
Beautiful.
You should make a Baywatch Nights game. I'm going to say, we're all thinking it.
Yeah. Make Hasselhoff like get mad and send you a cease and desist, Kevin.
There has to have been a Baywatch game. Like multiple Baywatch. I think Continue played a Baywatch game.
I don't think we did. I don't know.
But Baywatch Nights, they don't have a game.
That's true.
It needs a
game. It was in development, but something terrible happened to the studio. They were involved in a 6-car pileup.
like a Baywatch, like, I don't know. Like some kind of like NES like shooter or something like that. Like something
Why
weird.
Are they shooting in Baywatch?
They got the net gun, Dom.
The dolphins
yeah,
are coming at you. Yeah, yeah.
They have guns now.
Maybe they're shooting oxygen bubbles to lifeless bodies.
Live, goddammit, live. Just shoot more bubbles at them.
I'd never seen an episode of Baywatch before, this episode of Baywatch, so I just assumed they had guns in Baywatch Nights, and this was a gunless episode.
The cops respect Mitch as if he had a gun.
Yeah. Yeah, the cops didn't super... He didn't... He just used knives in that whole thing.
He's a knife guy.
Hmm.
Yeah. Paul, you got anything to promote?
Nah, same old shit. I'll be watching more Baywatch Nights.
Nice. This dude loves Baywatch Nights.
Much well. Dom, thank you again for joining us. It's good talking to you again, brother.
Yeah, it was great to be on. Thank you for having me. And I'm just tempted to talk a little bit about egg mode, which is something Paul and I understood.
Egg mode and getting hole everywhere.
Yeah, one thing that you can do for your girlfriend. This is something that boyfriends are doing for their girlfriends. When their girlfriend leaves for work,
Yeah. This is something I would like for people to check out. This is what I'm
Yeah. Okay. I mean, just think about maybe doing it. Paul and I understood this in the way that, like, we just have a high level of consciousness.
And so, thoughtfulness, like, yeah.
This was in the air, and we understood it while watching an episode of Baywatch Nights. And it's a thing that boyfriends are doing for their girlfriends, where when their girlfriend goes to work, they take off all their clothes, and then they ball up into, like, an egg shape, and then they roll around the apartment and get whole on everything.
and you say, I'm doing egg mode, and you roll around.
Not all girlfriends like it, though.
No, you should talk to your girlfriend before you do it. But if you do know that your girlfriend likes to have hole all over the place, which you should know, you should learn that about your girlfriend.
Yeah, you should talk about that early on.
Because girlfriends are going to come home and they're going to go, someone was going egg mode in here.
There's hole all over the place in here.
There is hole all over everything. Anyway.
They love it.
But boyfriends are doing it, and if you're a good boyfriend, you'll do it.
Yeah,
talk to your partner,
and find out about if they like hole.
I gotta get a partner just so I can go egg mode. I can't.
Yeah,
go egg
hey, you're
mode
not the only
me.
One, my friend, trying to go egg mode.
Hey, you can practice egg mode anytime you want, though.
That's absolutely true.
We'll be the same.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
All right, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go egg mode real quick. So I'll see you guys later.
I'll be watching on Twitch.
I'm going to go find a partner to egg myself for.
I'm going to roll around and call it Sonic Mode instead. I love you all. I'll talk to you next time.
Eggmodesingles.net. Okay, bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Love you.
Bye, guys. Bye. Love you. Bye.
The nights will never be the same.
This episode of Goosebuds was brought to you by our Patreon supporters. We'd like to thank everyone listed in the Book of Names.
Book of Names.
Starting with Stefan Jive Turkey Kuwabara,
Hollis Hornbeak,
Low Belly Hate Me,
Cameron Murphy Audio,
Michael McDowell,
Hey Josh Rob,
Mickey C,
Nathan Dolezal,
Mike Lanteri,
Buddy Morrill,
Alcade,
Mel Dipson.
Oh, I'm at the gates of heaven, and the first face I see, Afshin.
And the second, Brian Wells.
Wait, are we all dead? Dango Twist!
Zentacles pours their cup onto the ice church floor. Yes, melt the floor.
No, it adds to the ice.
But what temperature was the water? Stealth Bates.
Robert Moon.
Jason Crooker.
Clay Castle.
Miguel Pardo.
John Keating.
Calf.
Justice for Paranoia Shop content. I think it's still available online.
If it's not, ask the Juggalobalists.
Or Gregory D. Warren.
Or Alan Saylor.
Maybe ask Cody Redfield.
Bradford Coulter doesn't know what you're talking about.
Unrelated, Aiden pledges their hammer to Dwarf Daddy Kevin.
Yay, thank you, Dwarven Child.
Jaw Jaw Slinks.
Chosen One pledges his cadre of musketeers to House Kevin. Wow.
Thank you, musketeer children.
Levithan believes that House Kevin grows too strong.
Wow. Up in Champ believes in checks and balances as well.
That was mine! Jonas Eggman!
Alright, now Kevin goes. Carl.
Anthony Mulberry.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Elusive Koala.
Yanni Markovina.
Brooke X.
Jesus Christ.
Christian Van Skiver.
Drew Applegate.
Jeremy Lowe.
Brian Hobgood.
Zach Connor.
Patreon _ donator, yo.
Joe Spooky Digital Ghost. Tierney.
Tom Whittem.
Andrew Jadzak says, hey, relax and have a good time this summer.
Thanks, Andrew.
Maybe it wasn't meant to be passive-aggressive like that.
The ellipses made them seem actually more intimidating, I'll be honest.
I think the this summer really sold it for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to relax right now. It can be any time this summer.
Hey, relax.
Hey, right? Relax this summer.
Don't put it off all summer, though. Relax a little bit.
Get it started. Get it started with Lord Cornwallis relaxing.
Hey, Take it sleazy, Carson Birkenbean.
Put on that smooth jams off the new Murphy P.
Take a flight to Fancy Town with Alicia Grafe.
Kevin Ticklebean brings death to tyrants.
Sean Minogue.
Rushy Glenn.
Wiglet.
Luke LaFontaine.
Chip Handsome.
Matt McClellan.
John Barber.
Sarah Camp.
Tanya Turtle.
Jonas Blotterman.
Juan Jalapeno.
Keith Halcrow.
Timothy Misodoulakis.
Clay McCarty.
Parker Lee.
Ham underscore boat.
Hey, it's Paul Grasso.
Ah.
Hey, man. Raymond Hernandez.
Flemily.
The Crow Fans, but prideful.
Matthew Sutton.
Happy Pride. Pride's all year. Joe, regular name Scott.
Alex Moon, the robotic dog.
Jeffrey Owen Cahy.
Kelsey Kinneman.
Russell Casberg.
Javier Jimenez.
Chris Putrakis.
Scotty Pippin.
Luke Knoodles.
Dungeon Kappa.
Hugh Bolin.
Zambambino.
Ooh, Ice Acolyte Hamster. Welcome to the fold.
Raise the ice, grow it.
Zach Weir.
Limp Duck.
Tobias Clark.
Tobias Clark. Beat Virginia.
Nathan Remick.
Need More Kimchi.
Estimena. Lord of Paul's Pets.
Reed Stubendiek.
Lee Wood.
Chris Hard. Hard Penis and Sleep Clothes Nelson.
Cool name.
Fucking got me.
I love the gentle degradation of pajama boners to hard
penis. It is just a hard penis, but no, you don't really call it hard penis ever.
it's way more threatening if it's a hard penis.
Joey Evans.
Streak.
Carewise Gamgee.
Kieran McNamara.
Diet Soda.
Still thinking about hard penis. Spiky Yolo Squire has the moves. If you want him back, come to the old factory on Main Street with $10,000 cash, no cops.
Cameron Hansen.
Jackie Ledoux.
Coleman Laguza.
Lamb.
A pair of Scots?
Generally depressing.
The Deadly Bulb.
Levi Kidder.
David Gray.
Ben Bohan.
Matt, the Half-Court Warlock Bachelor.
We ball. Bryce Diori.
Matthew Brittato.
Carb Sun.
I am Cornholio. I need TP for my bunghole.
Anthony pledges their social anxiety to the people at the beginning of the Book of Names who don't participate in the show.
Anthony, those are our rocks. We need them to set the tone.
That's really good.
The swirling meta commentary in the Book of Names.
It's like Undertale.
No, this is exactly like Undertale.
Precisely like Undertale.
I actually meant to say Homestuck, but you know what? It's like Undertale.
What's happening?
Waiting for Chad to say Boney.
Oh, sorry. I was just thinking about Undertale. Boney!
Some of Chad's bird friends. We pledge our talents and sharpened beaks to Chad.
Nicholas Maloney.
Jonas Edvoldsen.
Calamity Carl.
Gerb Juice.
Burger's Wonderful World.
Nick Johnson.
Eric Horwitz.
Tiffany Lee.
Dr. Eggdrop Soupman.
Thomas Jansis.
Lucretia MacEvil.
Mutant astronaut in a robot voice.
Henry Torbert, also in robot voice.
Ryan Carroll, the last human to fight the robots.
Jeremy Bowser, the one who rises after the robots.
Bonergard Epsilon Hamilton, a.k.a. Hambone, host of Radio Bonaire.
Adam Knapp.
Ninja Breadman.
Megan McCormick Mason.
Peanut Berg Level 69.
Logan Derby.
Brad Schmelzer.
Chick.
Heloticus Frenchlin.
Aaron Lord.
Dr. Chocula pledges every claw and fang under his command to Paul.
Callum, Mr. Misfire West.
Mandy Nasty, and I'm noticing you guys don't thank your pledges anymore, just saying.
Damn! Skeletora and the greatest pledge. Pledge to me now. I'll thank you, I promise.
Robot Arena, thank you.
Yoplin.
Philip Reynolds, I pre-thank.
Nate Benchie, good job on the fan art this month. You did great.
That was great.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. SSJ Trogdor.
Yes, follow your heart.
Mr. Unimportant pledges this cool rock he found to whoever last trimmed their beard. I just did in the shower.
Oh, I did it last week.
Suckers.
I never do.
Ryan R. Davis.
Scott Wable.
Rocco.
Josh Howell. Oh, Josh Howell no longer pledges his zealotry as it has been mocked. No zealotry for anyone, which I would argue is kind of a zealous response.
I think we're all getting the zealotry right now.
I pledge my blade to Josh for having standards.
Damn.
The absence, a vow of complete non-zealotry is kind of zealotry.
He can't help himself.
Evan Bowen.
Mike Spaghetti Jones.
Greg Musto.
Chris.
Sean Aston masters the Gundam Death Scythe Hell Amber by 311 AMV.
Fuck yeah. Hi, first time, long time.
Allie Rose.
Sprinkle Buns.
Hilda B.
Soggy Newspapers.
Chris Kulik.
Dakota Kemp.
John W.
Liam Rogers.
Saturn Video.
All Lisuts.
Kate the Great.
Mike Art.
Kiwi of Lerve.
Serial Killer X.
Wade Norcross.
Cassandra Harris.
Gulliver.
Kit Bush.
Benjamin Luther.
Cyrus Sin.
That last name was my favorite.
Soap.
Big Nick Lane.
Kira and Brian are big fans.
Thank you. Dennis Wright.
I don't want to go over Kevin's pronunciation of exclamation point that we just had, but we need to hear that again. If Kevin, would you play that again, please? Future Kevin. Thank you. Jova the Moon.
The Office of the Goblin Grader.
Cameron Gansevelt.
Blake, Bad Time Having Cabin.
Dan Antonio!
Were the O's added recently, or were they always there?
They've been rocking for a while.
I thought they were new. Who knows?
Filthy Phil Philanthropist.
Matt Septor.
Greg Gervasi, a.k.a. VitaZen.
Pre and post thank to Greg.
Paul's Wing does its thing to Sonic's last golden ring tonight at 11. Da-dum.
Anthony Rodriguez.
B.
Farah.
CM.
Jeff Webb is still a big baby, but we both sincerely appreciate your well wishes.
It's been years. Jeff Webb is still a pig.
We need an update.
Alpaca acquaintance, DDS. I don't know what that stands for, but congratulations. Double doctorate scientist.
It's dentist, I think. Jesse!
Turaku, the thing that goes doink in the anime.
Chris Kurta.
Cole Gleason.
Tanya Hyde.
Jesse Boggs.
Michael Malloy.
Spencer Y.
Kyle O'Neill.
James Stavrinos.
Bjarnder.
Robert is Holden.
Goon Cahoots.
Chris, the official Goosebuds Chronicler and Ledgerman Byers.
Adam Brundle.
Greb Comics. Great comics.
Good comics. I love them.
Anthony Stoker.
Don't want to underplay. I said good after Chad said great. That does not mean I think they're lesser than great. I think they're great.
they're great comics.
They are.
Don't neg the comics, Paul.
I didn't mean to. It was an accidental neg.
Don't rat talk the comics.
Get me out of here, dog lips Kajoyan.
Brody underscore Danza.
Max to the max.
Wunderskin.
Girthworm Jim.
Babette's Feast 2, The Last Supper. Cool. I'd watch it.
Cool, me too.
Yeah.
Paul sent you my buddy doll. Wouldn't watch it.
Mm-mm. No, you keep your eyes on it the entire time.
Oh, well, you're right. I would always watch it.
Hurt, a.k.a. Cyberbully.
Talene Jones.
Logan Kilgus.
Boss Feratu.
Starship Dash 9.
Brandon Nichols.
Angelo Edward Longton Santone.
Ooh.
Smellities.
Bacon the Awkwardly Unseen.
Funny.
Proper Spaceman.
Caleb Snyder, Grandmaster of Spells and Enchantments, pledges his wizard stave, an ancient tome, to Paul.
Oh shit, he's got stave.
Stave.
Oh fuck, he's got a long piece of wood. Lumo Nuva.
Brian Udeth.
3 a.m. sleep.
A tall glass of dumb bitch juice.
Bobby of the Eastwood, unlockener of worlds.
Officially unofficial, ducks in public.
JW.
I don't know about this one.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
All right.
R.I.P. Chad, R.I.P. Aaron, R.I.P. Air Paranoia Shop, the Howling Eye has been slinked. You know, we have a podcast.
You're listening to a podcast.
You're listening to it. So we're focusing a lot on podcasts that don't exist anymore.
I think it's online somewhere. Nowhere, Lucas.
Brian Storrow.
Elodie.
C.L. Reagan.
And now, welcoming to the Book of Names, where you'll be immortalized forever and your pledges will all go to me, because I said so now, Psychosis. Hello. Hi.
And hello to the Book of Names, Kyle Welch. Love your juice.
Welcome, Sterner Stock.
Clint Deerking, pledge your dears to me.
Agents Miss Katonic. Ooh, you got some secrets there. Mystery. Welcome.
And welcome to Justin.
Hello and well met, Brian Seeker.
Hello, and also you, last in the Book of Names, new entry, JK. I hope you're not joking about your love for Goosebuds.
You better not just be kidding.
Well, boys, we survived another encounter with a hard penis.
The maelstrom of names has ended.
Thank you all very much. We love you. Goodbye.
Bye. Okay, bye. Bye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.